In early 1917, the original Dixieland Jazz Band made the first jazz recording. Over the next 100 years, we've heard transcendent leaps of creativity and staggering virtuosity. We have experienced the music of crushing pain, breathless romance, anger, exhilaration, and humor. This is that story. 100 years of jazz recordings. From WTJU Charlottesville, your host, Russell Perry. In the last hour, we listened to big bands that incubated the bebop music and served as the bridge between the swing bands and bebop. In this hour, we're going to look at the birth of bebop primarily through the early music of Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker. There's no better source of information and interpretation about the birth of bebop than Scott DeVoe's 1997 book, The Birth of Bebop, A Social and Musical History. In this source, Scott DeVoe says, "By the early 1940s, a new approach to small combo jazz playing was developing, characterized by a more flexible approach to rhythm, a more aggressive pursuit of instrumental virtuosity, and an increasingly adventurous harmonic language." Further, DeVoe writes, "Because its loose, improvisatory format offers an obvious point of contrast to the swing styles that preceded it, bebop is often represented by jazz historians as a conscious revolt against the tightly controlled commercial environment offered by the swing bands of the 1930s and 1940s. Yet it is not at all apparent that during the formative years of bebop, its inventors felt alienated from the large swing bands. Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, and many others continued to work with large dance orchestras during the war years, and from 1945 onward, Gillespie made it a point to present his music in a big band format whenever feasible. It makes more sense to see bebop as deriving from a musical environment that was very much a part of the musical culture of the swing era, even if largely invisible to the casual fan, the jam session." Thus, in the years before 1945, the musicians who would be in the forefront of bebop were known to the general public and to their fellow musicians as part of the up-and-coming generation of African-American swing soloists and arrangers. Dizzy Gillespie, who worked for more than a dozen different bands in the early 1940s, could be heard on recordings as an inventive arranger on Cab Calloway's Pickin' the Cotton in 1940, and as a blisteringly fast trumpet soloist on Lucky Millinder's Little John Special. So let's listen to Pickin' the Cabbage by Cab Calloway and his orchestra, a recording that Giddens and DeVoe write combines a hip harmonic bite with a Latin groove, and we'll follow that with Little John Special by Lucky Millinder and his orchestra. Thank you. Cab Calloway and his orchestra with Pickin' the Cabbage from 1940, and Lucky Millinder and his orchestra with Little John Special from 1942, featuring Dizzy Gillespie. In his History of Jazz, Ted Gioia wrote, "Gillespie's opportunities outside of the Calloway band also began to expand. In 1939, Gillespie was enlisted to participate in the Lionel Hampton recording of When the Lights Are Low and Hot Mallets, where he worked alongside a horn section composed of Ben Webster, Coleman Hawkins, Benny Carter, and Chu Berry." Let's listen to Hot Mallets, Lionel Hampton and his orchestra, with the front line as described, plus Clyde Hart on piano, Lionel Hampton on vibes, Charlie Christian on guitar, Milt Hinton on bass, and Cozy Cole on drums from 1939. Hot Mallets by Lionel Hampton and his orchestra, featuring Dizzy Gillespie, Benny Carter, Coleman Hawkins, Ben Webster, Chu Berry, and Embarrassment of Riches. And it's time to turn to Charlie Parker from Kansas City. Scott DeVoe wrote, "Charlie Parker's fluid, bluesy playing fit perfectly with the Kansas City sound of Jay McShann's band, as exemplified by his famous solo on the 1941 Hootie Blues." And here that is, Hootie Blues by Jay McShann and his orchestra from April 30th of 1941.
Hello, little girl. don't you remember me? Time ain't been so long, but I've had a break, you see. Well, I'm doing all right, found me a Cupid doll. Well, I'm doing all right, found me a Cupid doll. She lives two flights up, and she sends me with a smile. Well, she calls me her lover, well, and a beggar too. Yeah, she calls me her lover, well, and a beggar too. Ain't you sorry, little girl, that my new little girl ain't you?
Hootie Blues by Jay McShann and his orchestra, featuring that wonderful solo by Charlie Parker. When Jazz at 100 returns in a moment, we will hear from Coleman Hawkins, the one swing-era giant who consistently sponsored the new music. Welcome back to Jazz at 100 and the Birth of Bebop. We're turning our attention now to Coleman Hawkins, sponsor and mentor. Gary Giddens wrote, "Hawkins marked the end of the two-year AFM recording ban with two sessions that teamed advanced swing thinkers and exuberant modernists, including Dizzy Gillespie and Max Roach. They premiered important pieces by Gillespie, such as Woody and You, and Hawkins, Disorder at the Border, as well as gloriously fresh retakes on Body and Soul, which they called Rainbow Mist. Hawkins was by far the most eminent of the pre-bop monarchs to embrace the new jazz. Coleman Hawkins and his orchestra performing Woody and You, Disorder at the Border, and Rainbow Mist from February of 1944 in what has been described as the first modern jazz record date. Thank you. Coleman Hawkins and his orchestra with Dizzy Gillespie, Oscar Pettiford on bass, Max Roach on drums, Woody and You, Disorder at the Border, and Rainbow Mist. With an all-star recording unit, Coleman Hawkins recorded the first of many versions of Dizzy Gillespie's perennial favorite, Salt Peanuts. So here's Salt Peanuts from the Auld Hawkins Webster Septet. The front line for the septet is Charlie Shavers on trumpet, Coleman Hawkins, Ben Webster, and Georgie Auld on tenor sax.
Thank you.
Salt Peanuts by the Auld, Hawkins, and Webster Septet. Coleman Hawkins said in 1942, "I think the majority of rising colored band leaders would be smart to concentrate on smaller outfits. The number of places where big Negro bands can go on location is becoming limited, but there are any number of spots open to jumpy small bands, such as the Cafe Society and Famous Door in New York, for example." And in this period, Hawkins focused on those smaller units. In 1944, Coleman Hawkins introduced pianist Thelonious Monk to the jazz audience outside of New York. Ted Gioia wrote, "In his 1944 Sides with Coleman Hawkins, Monk revealed his zeal for experimentation to a wider audience, although he balanced his dissonances here with a judicious dose of more circumspect sounds. Hear, for example, his solo on Flyin' Hawk, where the first 16 bars hew close to bebop, but the closing 16 bars sound the way jazz might be played in another galaxy." So here, from October of 1944, Flyin' Hawk and Driftin' on a Reed from the Coleman Hawkins Quartet with Thelonious Monk. Thank you. two selections from the Coleman Hawkins Quartet with Thelonious Monk, Flyin' Hawk and Driftin' on a Reed. Scott DeVoe describes Hawkins' choice of Monk as a pianist as startling, and writes further, "At the time, Thelonious Monk was scarcely known outside the circles at the after-hours jam clubs Minton's and Monroe's. Musician and audiences alike were used to judging pianists by their facility and virtuosity, with Art Tatum as the nearly impossible standard. By this measure, Monk's style seemed at best merely adequate and at worst distractingly peculiar. He carries the additional burden of reputation as an unreliable eccentric." We'll return in a moment to Jazz at 100 and the early bebop milestones of Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker. Welcome back to Jazz at 100 and the Birth of Bebop. Turning our attention to Charlie Parker, Charlie Parker's contributions to his first small group session with guitarist Tiny Grimes sets the stage for the explosion of music to follow. Here's Tiny's Tempo from the Tiny Grimes Quintet, featuring Charlie Parker, September of 1944. Thank you. Tiny's Tempo from the Tiny Grimes Quintet, with Tiny Grimes on guitar and Charlie Parker on the alto sax. In 1945, Gillespie had his first opportunity to record with a group of his own, bringing a collection of well-adapted swing players and new bebop players. Gillespie recorded Tad Dameron's Good Bait and the standard I Can't Get Started. January 9, 1945, the Dizzy Gillespie Sextet. Dizzy Gillespie on trumpet, journeyman swing trombone player Trummy Young, Don Bias on tenor sax, Clyde Hart on piano, Oscar Pettiford on bass, and Shelly Mann on drums. Good Bait and I Can't Get Started. Two selections from the Dizzy Gillespie Sextet of January 1945, Good Bait and I Can't Get Started. On February 28, 1945, as Ted Gioia writes, Parker and Gillespie recorded several historic sides, including Dizzy Atmosphere and Groovin' High. On Dizzy Atmosphere, Parker floats over the changes, flirting with polytonality during the second eight bars and executing a stunning rhythmic displacement in the bridge. Gillespie follows with a virtuoso's bag of tricks, dancing leaps into the high register, intricate repeated passages, odd intervals, and choppy change-up phrases. Groovin' High was more subdued, with Parker contributing supple solos, somewhat reminiscent of his Lester Young roots. February 28, 1945, Dizzy Atmosphere and Groovin' High. Thank you. two of the historic recordings by the Dizzy Gillespie Sextet featuring Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker from February 1945, Dizzy Atmosphere and Groovin' High. Miles Davis wrote, "I've come close to matching the feeling of that night in 1944 in music when I first heard Diz and Bird, but I've never quite got there. I'm always looking for it, listening and feeling for it, though, trying to always feel it in and through the music I play every day." A final word from Scott DeVoe. "From the longer perspective that only history can afford, the equivalent of the cinematic long shot, the thrust of all this activity seems clear. To establish a small combo jazz idiom as the alternative to the commercial entertainments of the swing dance orchestras, and in the process to reassert the spontaneity and complex dialogic rhythms of the jam session as the essence of jazz. And all this activity begs the question, as bebop rose, what was becoming of the big bands?" George Simon, in his encyclopedic work, The Big Bands, writes, "By late 1946, it was apparent that the band business was getting worse and worse. The reason was obvious. The supply of bands far exceeded the demand. All at once, this simple economic fact seemed to dawn on 8 top band leaders at one time, for in the single month of December 1946, 8 of them announced they were calling it quits. Woody Herman, Benny Goodman, Harry James, Les Brown, Jack Teagarden, Benny Carter, Ina Ray Hutton, and Tommy Dorsey. For all intents and purposes, this was the official end of the big band era." Some of the same forces that launched bebop also fueled the birth of rhythm and blues. Bebop and R&B were small, combo-driven innovations that shared the big bands as a common pool of musicians who explored harmonically rich alternatives to swing in bebop and the rhythmically propelled alternative in R&B. In the next hour, we will explore the music of bebop's twin, rhythm and blues, and the mid-1940s contributions of Jimmy Forrest, Jimmy Liggins, Roy Milton, and the giant of early R&B, Louis Jordan. You have been listening to Jazz at 100, a history of 100 years of jazz recordings produced by WTJU Charlottesville and made possible in part through a grant from the Virginia Endowment for the Humanities. For full playlists, including players and recording dates, and a listing of additional resources to enhance your appreciation of this important music, please go to wtju.net/jazz100. There you can also stream any of the programs in this series that you may have missed. This is your host, Russell Perry.